Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. On this episode, I get into a conversation about COVID-19, the pandemic, how it's being managed, and what is happening to us as a people throughout this time where we're trying to fight this thing. We're in lockdown. We're trying all kinds of things to try to mitigate the damage. And what's some of the fallout of those things that we're trying? I brought Sean Stevenson on the podcast to talk about that stuff. Sean is not a conspiracy theorist. He is a scientist, and that's why I wanted to have him on the show. I wanted to have a really grounded conversation about what does the evidence say? What do the studies say about all these different interventions that we're trying? Because it's becoming more and more clear to me that some of the things that are being put into place are political, and they're not grounded in science. They're not grounded in evidence. So Sean is a well-studied nutritionist. He wrote the book Sleep Smarter, and recently he wrote the book Eat Smarter. He went to school for studying biology and business, and eventually he went on to found the Advanced Integrative Health Alliance. This guy is a wealth of knowledge. He's got just insane amounts of data in his head. And, you know, all of his statements that he makes on the show are backed by science. And I'm going to link to the stuff that he's talking about in the show notes so that if you want to look into the things that he's saying and perhaps challenge those things, you'll be able to go and read the studies. So we get into some conversations that may challenge what your view of things at this time, you know, or your government's view of things. So what I ask is for people to go into this episode prepared with an open mind, willing to change your mind on certain topics. But the purpose of the episode is not necessarily just to change your mind, but it's really to empower you. You know, what can people do right now in a time where all of our health is declining? You know, we're all shuttered inside more. We're going out less. We have less social contact. We're eating more. There's more fear in our bodies. There's more fear in the media. You know, our immune systems are actually being depressed right now. We see less sun. We have less vitamin D, right? We're carrying extra pounds. What can you do to improve your own immune function, to improve your own health, so that you're contributing to the larger scheme of things, you know, by taking care of yourself? We do get into that on this episode. You know, how can you, if you want to go with the most vain explanation, how do you shed your COVID-15, you know, that you put on in the last year? We get a little bit into that on this episode. And if you want to deep dive on that, buy Sean's book, Eat Smarter, and enjoy this episode with Sean Stevenson. And as always, if you enjoy the show, please share the show with friends, subscribe, and if you have 30 seconds, leave a review for the show on iTunes or on whatever other platform you use to listen to the show. I really appreciate the reviews. I love dropping in every once in a while and seeing the reviews that people leave. And you folks are the reason why I do this thing. So thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Love you lots. Inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast. Great to have you on the Evolving Man Podcast. Thank you for gracing us with your presence. I'm really excited to have you on the show. I have been looking at your book. Sleep Smarter is behind me somewhere on this bookshelf, and recently acquired your Eat Smarter book. And you are a guy who early on in the pandemic, I started seeing videos where you were doing your own research and trying to look for evidence when most people were just hearing from the government what should and shouldn't be done, what is and isn't healthy, which we've all been dealing with for a long time. And I really appreciated the way that you went looking for information and were willing to uncover what the truth is, you know, and have uncomfortable conversations in some cases. So anyhow, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for taking the time. It's a pleasure to have you.
The pleasure's all mine. I'm excited. You know, like you just mentioned, with times like this, there was a big thing going around. There's actually an article in a really, really prestigious news source saying that when it comes to science, you should not do your own research. you know, and I actually shared that and passed that around. And it's one of the most really disempowering and ignorant tenets, you know, because all things in life is real education is education from within. At Duco, it's kind of the root of where the word even comes from, the understanding comes from. Mm-hmm. And at a time like this, you know, this is a time to question everything like never before. And when we talk about doing my own research, that's in combination with many of my colleagues. And this is the top people in the game, you know, like from the top neuroscientists to, you know, Nobel Prize winning folks in statistics and, you know, biochemistry, the list goes on and on. And it's just going to be a different perspective. And really, any successful choices made for a civilization is going to be based on multiple perspectives.
Yeah.
But what we've seen is a very vanilla, one size fits all, really damaging and unsuccessful approach to handling the situation. You know, because for me, there's so much data that already exists on how the human body works in response to viral infections, whether they're novel or not. And many of these things are not being discussed. You know, just some of the basic tenets of how our environment and, you know, epigenetic factors influence our, you know, our immune system, the adaptive immune system, you know, all this data exists. We've got so much good stuff. And at this point, we could have already really empowered our citizens to just really get our society healthier. You know, one of the things that I saw early on, you know, I was right on top of the data coming out of Italy. Mm-hmm. And I was sharing the data and how we saw at that time, 88% of the folks who lost their lives in association with this virus, with SARS-CoV-2, had one or more pre-existing chronic diseases, oftentimes two or three. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, but on the surface it's going to be like, well, it doesn't matter the condition. It's this virus is the thing.
Yeah.
It's the virus is the issue.
Yeah.
And we're not looking at the susceptibility.
And
so sure enough, here today, you know, looking at the data from the CDC, and mm-hmm. I shared this as well, 2020 September, after they compiled all the data at this point, 94% of the folks who lost their lives here in the United States in association with SARS-CoV-2 had an average of 3.8 pre-existing chronic diseases.
Yeah.
In September, it was 2.6. Since they've updated it, it's 3.8.
Wow.
Pre-existing chronic diseases and or comorbidities. And it's just simply not being talked about is getting our citizens healthier and simply just reducing our susceptibility, reducing our risk by doing the things that really make us human and make us robust and healthy.
Mm-hmm. And improving our immune function. Yeah. And I think a lot of times when I see that statistic posted, the instant reaction from people is what you're saying is that those people don't matter because they're sick, right? You're saying is like these deaths are okay because those people were sick and they did it
right.
to themselves or something like that. But yeah, what I'm hearing coming clear in your message is like, no, we need to talk about our health. Why is nobody talking about our health? And why are we focusing on the, like just keeping the pathogen away, keep it away, whatever we can do to keep it away. You know, there's this sort of like us and it mentality. But there's no talk about us and what's going on with us and how we can improve us so that it doesn't kill as many of us, right?
Yeah, you just said it. You know, unfortunately, the media and even politicians, it's really been politicized to the most disturbing extent that, you know, I don't think anybody in our generation or generations close to ours have ever seen anything like this. Because what the media really focuses on, as I mentioned, 94% of the people who lost their lives had an average of 3.6 pre-existing chronic diseases or comorbidities. This is from the CDC, that it's pointed to CDC on your posts if you talk about it, but nobody's actually reading the data. And what people do, instead of talking about the 94% and helping to reduce this susceptibility, they focus on the 6% who were, quote, perfectly healthy.
Right.
And this is such a misnomer because even within that, first of all, it's ignoring, like you said, the 94%. It's ignoring these people as if, you know, they just had it coming and we can't do anything about it, which is absolutely not true. The Journal of the American Medical Association published a big meta-analysis. This was just in 2018. The number one cause of our pre-existing chronic diseases is poor diet. The number one susceptibility. But nobody's talking about that, you know, in relationship to immunity. And the craziest part is, you know, I've been in this field for 20 years. And, you know, I'm the guy that I'm brought into the medical conferences. I'm teaching doctors. I just taught a neuroscience class for NYU. You know, I'll step in and, you know, do these guest lectures and things like that. I've been working in this field for quite some time with such a diverse influence and impact. And so when I'm looking at this data and when I say things like I'm about to say, it really hits different. So one of the top cardiologists in the world, if not the top cardiologist, is a friend of mine. He's very popular. I'm not going to drop names, but you know, he made a transition in his career because his patients simply weren't getting well. It's just a revolving door of statins and lisinoprils and surgeries. And when he went to school for 12 years, expensive medical degree, and in that 12 years, this is the craziest thing, in 12 years, his specialty is treating and being able to monitor and support conditions related to the cardiovascular system, the heart, arteries, veins, blood, etc. Now, in his 12 years of education, he learned about nutrition for 2 weeks. And the fundamental flaw with this is that your heart is literally made from the food that you eat.
Yeah.
Your heart is literally made of food. Your blood that's running through your arteries is made from food. And of course, water. It's made from food. The arteries themselves are made from food. There's a fundamental flaw in the education. A system can only be as good, a model can only be as good as its underlying premise. And the underlying premise that we have in our conventional system of healthcare ignores food. And your body is made of food. So there's a big problem here. And so what I'm bringing this up to say, when we're talking about the immune system and the immune cells, your immune cells are made from food. They're literally made from food. The organs related to the immune system, you know, the lymphatic system, your gastrointestinal tract, the microbes in your gut, all of these things are made from food and or are eating off of your food supply that you're giving it. Mm-hmm. So if we're not bringing this into the conversation, we're really failing. And so the last part here in that 94% versus the 6% who are, quote, perfectly healthy, you're an incredibly healthy individual. It doesn't matter, though. This is the thing. At the end of the day, you can be as healthy as you want to be. Everybody listening, myself included, I can be the healthiest person on planet Earth. But suddenly, if I'm excessively stressed with work and I'm not sleeping well, or my movement practices have just kind of gone out the window because I'm scared and I'm not going outside and I'm not moving around.
Yeah, yeah.
And or, you know, with people right now, one of the things that we've seen, they've got these little cute names for it, quarantine 15, COVID-19 pounds, you know, people have increased their consumption of alcohol and processed foods. All of these things come into play. As healthy as I might be, any of us can absolutely destroy our immune system within a very short amount of time. I'm talking one day. If I just stay up from now until 24 hours, you know, until tomorrow at this time, we see a dramatic suppression of immune function. And so, and this is, by the way, I'll reaffirm everything with data. You know, so we've got things like Appalachian State University finding, for example, just a 20-minute walk, just a 20-minute short walk immediately boosts immune parameters, most notably for your natural killer cells, neutrophils. Natural killer cells have been found to be extremely effective at killing SARS-CoV-2 infected cells. But if I'm not moving suddenly, we're already a sedentary population, and I'm not exercising, my immune system starts to be suppressed. The same thing with sleep. We have study on top of study. Anybody could just go to Dr. Google and type in sleep deprivation and immune system studies and just go to town. It'll take you weeks to go through it all. And one of the things that we immediately see, and this is from the Mayo Clinic, just one night of sleep deprivation makes you more susceptible to contracting a viral infection. All right? So when I'm saying this stuff, it's not just like hearsay or it sounds kind of cute. These are the things that literally control our immune system. And again, this quote, perfectly healthy, as stressed as we are, and one of the things that I just did recently is dive into all the most recent data on the psychosomatic effects of COVID-19. And how, and I'll just fear. Share this really quickly as well.
Right. Well, how does fear affect your immune system?
Exactly. And so this study, this was published in a peer-reviewed journal, Brain Behavior and Immunity. investigated the dynamics of psychoneuroimmunology in COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So literally how your mind is controlling your immune system, all right? Your mind is controlling, your perception of reality is controlling your immune function. And some of the key points the researchers revealed are, one, there's been a substantial unanticipated impact of COVID-19 on the psychological health of both the general community and affected individuals. This is something we should know.
Yeah.
Number two, the fear of COVID-19. Key word, fear of COVID-19 and the consequent lockdown and economic crisis has led to globally increased psychological stress and immune impairment. Activated immune inflammatory pathways, especially chronic low-grade inflammation, are directly associated with psychiatric issues. So experiencing increased stress, anxiety, depression, literally damages your immune system and creates inflammation. And COVID-19 is a pro-inflammatory condition that has a tropism for lung tissue, which is your immune system is what's actually creating the inflammation. It's not the virus, it's the response.
Yes. Yeah.
And those are just three key points from, again, prestigious peer-reviewed journal. This data is coming out now, but if you're in the know, really, you can see this coming from a mile away.
Yeah. I love this conversation. And it's not, I just want to reaffirm for people that this is not to criticize COVID-19 or its reality or point the finger elsewhere. My main agenda for this conversation is to empower people to understand what it is that affects their health and how they can take care of themselves in this time where we're all under restrictions in some way. I mean, it depends in the U.S., it depends on which state you're in, and in many cases, it depends on what country you're in. We're all under these different draconian measures, but we have to figure out how we can take care of ourselves at this time. I mean, so the main thing I want for people is for them to be empowered to understand their own health and what they can do to take care of themselves. And I want people to be empowered to see the evidence and know what measures to support and not to support in their government. You know, for instance, in Canada right now, we are locking people up in COVID hotels, COVID jails, and making them pay for it when they come back, across the border. And it doesn't make any sense because we're not New Zealand. There's already a ton of COVID-19 in the country. Our case numbers have been going down for the last 3 months since December, and the measures are getting worse. And the media is just stoking more fear and talking about how bad things are going to get. And that's the message that we keep getting from the government. Everything's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And so we're going to do this COVID hotel thing, and it's going to help save us. And when a poll is done of the people, 71% of people think it's a good idea, even though there doesn't seem to be any real logic in locking people up and making them pay for it. So that's my frustration is that, like, the mind of the masses seems to be just in agreement with whatever's kind of coming down the pipe, you know? And that's what I love about your work is, like, you're willing to challenge, like, well, wait, like, we're being told this, you know? The regular practice is this, but what does the evidence say, you know? And I had a birth expert on, Jessica Austin, last year, and she said much of what happens in the process of birth in hospitals and many of the norms aren't necessarily evidence-based. In fact, there's many practices that are done as a norm in the process of birth that cause adverse outcomes more than if we had just, like, left our hands off, you know? And it's obvious to me that that's the case in some of the ways that the pandemic is being managed. And, I just want people to think for themselves and look at the evidence and support the evidence.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want people to think for themselves, but unfortunately, and these are things that you have to just come to grips with at some point, is that there is very much a hive mind, in many instances, and very much, you know, people, we really enjoy the idea of freedom or even the illusion of freedom, but most people are just following along with the trend. They're following along with what everybody else is doing. There's many wonderful studies on this as well, of not standing out, you know, fitting in with the popular narrative, even in something as small as just a room full of people. You know, you'll literally lie to yourself and say that, you know, this thing is a certain color. And, you know, like even like the FBI and, you know, all these different government bodies have run tests on these things. But you'll literally say, even though you know that the color is brown, you'll say it's blue just because the rest of the group is, because you don't want to be the only one who's standing out. It's a natural human tendency. Yeah. But also then you got to keep in mind, too, in every great event, there's always going to be people who kind of push the limits, who question things, who stand out, who go ahead. But for me, I mean, and I'm grateful to have this conversation, but I never for not a single moment thought that this was controversial or that there's anything challenging about this. It's not. This is what I've been doing, you know, for 20 years. And because of that, you know, even my latest book, Eat Smarter, came out at literally the tip of 2020 going into 2021. I don't know if that's a good visual. Never mind. It's just the tip. But December 29th is when it came out, and it was actually pushed back. You know, it was coming out last April. And so my release week was release. Let me stop with the puns. All right. So it came out at this time and it became the number one book in the United States, number one bestseller of all books, fiction and nonfiction. So number one new release. Let me be clear. Number one new release book.
Yeah.
And there was books coming, like Disney published a book and all this stuff. Like, it's really remarkable, you know, but it's not done on the backs of like false data or some kind of cookie cutter trendy thing. There's just a lot of truth there, you know, very sustainable, evergreen tenets of how the human body works. Now, I'm saying this to say this. And this is really cool. You know, I don't talk about this very much, but the book sold out within 6 days, which is not good, by the way. It's not like a concert where the venue is the limit. We want as many people to be able to get the book as possible.
Yeah.
They're back in stock now, but they sold out. And so I didn't even have a full retail week, and we still were in the top 10 with Barack Obama's book, Matthew McConaughey's book, and this book on food, and this book on food and nutrition and human health. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm not one of those guys, like I'm not out there on social media and doing all this stuff. I'm doing some of it now, but my podcast, yes, it is one of the top in the country. It's been number one many times, but even with that, you can't have that kind of power of scale when you're going up against celebrity and politics. And what I'm trying to say is that there's a statement that there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come.
Uh-huh.
And truly, there are millions of people right now want to feel good. They want to be healthier. They want solutions. They want to know what's going on. But our tendency is to follow in line with what the group is doing, whether it's right or wrong. You know, it's the concept of the lemmings jumping off the cliff. But if we can make valid, evidence-based data available for folks that's non-dogmatic, that's inclusive, that's looking at all pieces of the equation, because something you alluded to before, which should go unsaid, it's not about the virus being a myth. It's not anything like that. It's taken into consideration the weight of the virus versus the weight of having children not go to school for a year and shut themselves off. My family member, a girl who's in my family, and, you know, we've got different, you know, family, different places. We don't all talk to each other regularly. She just tried to fucking kill herself last week because where I come from, I'm from Ferguson, Missouri. It's where I spent the majority of my years. Uh-huh. We have a little cousin. I'm sorry, a little nephew. It's my kid's cousin who just was shot and murdered about 6 months ago. And I'm the only one that has put myself in position to be even able to pay for the funeral, for example, to help support with that. Yeah. You know, so I'm there in these different capacities, but I can't be there holding the culture and trying to manage all these things. Not only that, my son Jordan, we went to one of the top schools in Missouri. You know, it's the rated number two school in Missouri Lafayette High School just churns out professional athletes. Lots of my friends, you know, went to major leagues, football, all that good stuff. You know, like Ryan Howard was one of my linemen blocking for me, who's like, he's the MVP with the Phillies. But I can go on and on. They just did a segment in St. Louis on a news channel that I was on regularly, highlighting the epidemic of suicide and attempted suicide.
Yeah.
At Marquette and Lafayette, the two biggest high schools there. Of the approximately 800 students surveyed, approximately 500 thought about killing themselves. Uh-huh. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And yet it's as if the data doesn't exist. You know, and so what I did was, so number one, I was so grateful to see the fact that the news would even highlight something like that, because it's in the less than 1% that would be featured. And I was so proud of my city and that news channel who I've done a lot of work with to do that. But here's just a couple of the studies that we have that is not getting highlighted. This was published in the journal Pediatrics. This is the top peer-reviewed journal in the subject. In the title of the journal, Suicide Ideation and Attempts in Pediatric Emergency Department Before and During COVID-19, The results were really fucked up. Another study, this was published in another prestigious journal, International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, found that children's anxiety and factors related to COVID-19 pandemic, and what they did was dive in and look at anxiety and depression in children, skyrocketing. It was not good. Another study, this was published in the Archives of Disease and Childhood, longitudinal, and the title of the study, Longitudinal Increases in Childhood Depression Symptoms During COVID-19 Lockdown. No shit.
Yeah.
Another study, and this was published in BMC Public Health, Early Effects of the COVID-19 Pandemic on Physical Activity and Sedentary Behavior in Children Living in the U.S. I mentioned this earlier. It's not good. And the last one I'll share, International Journal of Disaster Risk Reduction, the title of the study, How is COVID-19 pandemic impacting the mental health of children and adolescents? The data is so clear, but you can see this coming from a mile away. Mm-hmm. Our children, who are the most important population of people, they haven't even had a chance. I'm saying that they're most important because we are making decisions for them. They can't even be involved in the decision making. Mm-hmm. Here, right now, in the United States, a lot of folks don't realize this. There have been approximately, at this point, 700 children under the, not even children, let me rephrase that. People under the age of 24 who've passed away with COVID-19 on the death certificate, all right? But you would think that this is indiscriminately out here killing all of these children, that this is happening. But we do have so many cases in those younger adults. We have, it's incredible. There's a tremendous amount of cases. But the mortality rate is so low. And we knew this early on. We had the data on this. And part of the reason, the question is why? What we should be asking is why? Why are kids just seem to not be as affected? One of the things we've identified in the research is their natural killer cells. Kids have a lot, their natural killer cells are just on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so it was so effective, the FDA fast-tracked before this whole thing with the, you know, the new injectables, they fast-tracked the drug to target our natural killer cells. And because our natural killer cells are so effective at killing SARS-CoV-2 infected cells. And I just mentioned just one tiny study earlier from Appalachian State University, finding that a short walk can boost your natural killer cells production and activity. But we always are trying to weaponize and create a pharmaceutical out of something that our bodies do innately, you know? And so the last point here that I wanted to share was, you know, and this is obviously is really hitting close to home now. And what's not been considered is the big picture. Like, what is the impact this is going to have on our children? Not just now, but for years to come. Fragmented development. Children every week, especially when you're elementary, there are social and emotional developmental things happening in the brain. There's more myelin getting laid down in certain processes and behavior. And when those things are cut off, this can create literally lifelong damage. It's going to take a miracle to fix these things. I believe in miracles, though. I believe in miracles. I believe we can do it. But the ramifications, the nature of how bad it is, and any epidemiologist, top psychiatrist, psychologist, neurologist, neuroscientist, all of these, the top ones in the world, are my friends and colleagues. All right. So the ones that movies are being made about. These are my friends. All collectively agree, very likely that the treatment, this cookie cutter, one size fits all approach to treating this thing, is likely far more deadly than the issue itself. Right. And the long-term impact.
The treatment being the lockdowns, all of the draconian measures, plus the vaccine? Or are you talking about just the
We're not lockdowns? Talking about the vaccine.
Yeah. 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 I mean, what I hear you saying is like lockdowns damage the immune system. They increase suicidal ideation. They, you know, they depress every part of your system. And as we know, people eat more for comfort. The more fear that they're feeling, the less they're sleeping, the lower their immune system goes. And I've lost friends to suicide this year as well. I had a friend with two kids who jumped off a bridge because his depression that has just been sort of hanging out for his whole life. And a lot of people listening to this will be able to relate to this. There's some people that live with a low level of depression throughout their whole lives, and it kind of goes up and down. And COVID hits and it tanks. And it becomes so much for him that he couldn't go on. And to the point where he couldn't think of his kids and not jump, you know? And those consequences are not easily accounted for. Those numbers are not easily counted in this scenario. And it's troubling. I mean, something that's becoming more and more clear is that we can't do this again. You know, I can't imagine still being here a year from now. I mean, we're going to be dropping like flies, not from the virus, right?
You know what's so funny, man, is that, you know, like I'm here in the state of California. You know, New York has obviously been really traumatized by this experience, but the governor's now is just like, we've got to open things up. We've got to open things up. Dude, like, and he's also saying it from it's the pressure. He doesn't know shit. He doesn't know about data. He's just hearing it from, you know, the constituents. He's hearing it from the population, like, you're killing us by not enabling us to go to work, you know? And so all of these things were clearly happening in the beginning, but this is largely considered ground zero. And so actually it was in the Journal of the American Medical Association as well that I shared the data immediately, because we had the best data coming out of New York, that it was, again, somewhere around 90% of the folks who were ending up in the ICU and passing away in association with SARS-CoV-2 had one or oftentimes more pre-existing chronic diseases, all right? And one of the other things that we saw was ending up in the ICU, you were 20 times more likely to end up in the ICU if you're deficient in vitamin D, for example.
Thank you.
And then people, you know, researchers are putting out data and studies on vitamin D, and it's getting censored or deleted off of platforms. It's the craziest thing. This kind of thing doesn't happen on its own. It takes a collaborative effort of ignorance. And I'm not going to say that it's coming from a pure place of evil or anything like that, because many of these folks, I got to believe in my heart that they're well-intentioned. There are some terrible people in the world, absolutely, who are doing heinous things. Yeah. But right. I've got to keep it in perspective that, you know, for the most part, some of these things were in an effort to save lives, but they did not take into consideration the people who are actually making decisions and policy. It was going on this one very twisted tunnel vision metric of what science is. And science is about questioning everything. It's about questioning each and every part of it. So we should have brought in epidemiologists who are well-versed in disease in a population. For example, one of the top epidemiologists, and I say he's one of the top because not only is he a professor of epidemiology, but he's worked with multiple states in creating their healthcare policies, working alongside governors for years. So this level of brilliance and experience, he shared with me very early on that, number one, when we see a confirmed amount of cases in a population, so right now there's like 110, as of this recording, is like 110 million confirmed cases. When you see a number of confirmed cases, and by the way, that comes with a huge asterisk because, I mean, the testing. This is one of the biggest issues as well. Matter of fact, let me share this with you guys really, really quickly, because it's such a big issue that one of these papers that can be looked past very easily, and this was published in the BMJ, one of the, we're talking top 10 most prestigious journals, all right? The BMJ. The title of the paper is COVID-19, politicization, corruption, and suppression of science. Now, this is something that can easily get looked past, and this, for many people who are just struggling with this, to know that there are scientists who are doing these studies, who are looking at the data. And this study, one of the things they mentioned was how the UK government was part and parcel connected to some manipulation, possibly intentionally, in spending tens of millions. There are hundreds of millions of dollars in play, billions potentially for testing, right? And the tests already being known to be ineffective, but yet being distributed and paid for. So the testing now, and now the WHO has come out recently and said there's some issues with the PCR, but the data existed early on. And the inventor of the PCR test, if you want to go and look into his work, he said early on, you cannot use this test to identify viruses like that. It's just, it's not how you can. He basically, just to create a summarization of what he said, is that if you drill down far enough, you can find a little bit of everything in anything. All right. So Carrie Mullins, you can look into that. But here's the point. Yeah. This is the end statement with this. So knowing that this is the case, 110 million confirmed cases, which again is going to have an asterisk. Any good epidemiologist, which most people have no idea about this, is pretty shocking, will tell you that when we have a certain number of cases, confirmed cases, there is high probability 10 to 15 times at least more cases in the population.
Right.
So we're talking well over a billion people have contracted this virus. And then if you look at the actual mortality rate, because a lot of people are throwing around this 99.9 survivability. We didn't even, survival rate wasn't even a thing. It's like a new term that's really getting kicked around. We shouldn't even be looking at things in that term. But it makes the mortality rate so low because so many people have having it. It's no longer pandemic, epidemic, it's endemic. Mm-hmm. It's just built into the fabric. And so when you're talking about not repeating this and learning, everything that we're doing is just delaying the inevitable and making our susceptibility worse at the end of the day.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we can't go on running from things that are, I understand it's a novel virus, but there will always be novel viruses coming into the population. And, the focus, like I said earlier, the focus on keeping it out and us over here in antibiotics, antivirals, vaccines, sanitize everything. It just doesn't seem to be working, And
How have we done?
We've not
done
well.
Just be honest. In America specifically, we are the worst. We're the worst. Cases, deaths, it's crazy. And here in the state of California, highest rated cases. We've had the most, I can open my window right now, and it's been like this for almost a year now. I can look out and I will see everybody. Well, I'll say 9 out of 10 people, and I've been tracking, I've actually been recording. 9 out of 10 people are wearing their mask. They're keeping their distance. Some kid just this weekend had a birthday party over here on the corner. All the parents are distanced. The kids have their mask on. They're all distance. It's been going on like this for a year.
Yeah.
But what the media frames it is that there's these people who are breaking the rules who are actually creating the issues. It's the anti-maskers and this and that. And, and anytime you throw anti on anything, it's just very dismissive.
Yeah.
It's dismissive of the science that exists. I shared early, as you mentioned, and I didn't think it would be controversial because the data exists. And ultimately, and so one of the studies that I shared was from one of the most prestigious journals looking at nurses. So what the mandates around masks have been, and I know you wanted to talk about this. Should I go ahead and jump in on it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the preface for this is that people, we really want to know that certain things are going to fix this whole problem here. We want to know that testing works. We want to know that masks work. We want to know that the vaccine's going to work so that we can hold on and just have hope. But the more you look into stuff like this, the more you see that it's just one little tool that may not even have nearly the effectiveness that you think it has. But we want to believe that thing, so we just hold on to it, So, I've looked into masks and I've watched your stuff about masks. This is, by the way, why normal people should follow people who are doing the research like you, Sean, because guys like you are so helpful for the rest of us, alternative media sources, people who are looking beyond beyond the veil, beyond the pale, perhaps. So yeah, share with us like what you've seen about masks, because in many cases, I feel like everyone's like super bought in, like masks are gonna stop everything. And you know what you just shared there about everyone walking around with masks is clear that it's not doing much.
So this is very simple, right? If we, this is the thing, it's all about framing. There's a statement that, you know, politics is all about appearances. I'm a scientist. I've been in this field for 20 years, but I'm not just any run-of-the-mill scientist. And this could be a little bit disarming, or it could be a little bit disenchanting, because I'm a cool person as well, you know? So I'm not like walking around with my pocket protector and this kind of thing. I want it to be effective, especially if it's something recommended at mass scale. I went into the data to look for how can we make this work better? How can we make masks work better? Yeah. How can we make masks? What are the most effective instances where they are effective? And also, how can we do this without venturing into a place where we might be harming ourselves? You know, because I had at that point already seen a few people driving around with their windows up and their mask on. I'm just like, I don't know if that's safe.
Or you know? Running with the mask on, or cycling, like panting with the mask on, right?
And you're like, yeah, so, and for me, it's just like, we all have to recognize we have cognitive biases. And this is what most people don't realize. So when you mention about following someone like myself, no. Unfortunately, there are very few people who are coming into things knowing they have a cognitive bias and looking for how they're wrong. I'm proactively looking to be wrong. It's very difficult to accept that that's true. But from where I come from, I have to do that. I have to be so good at this that it is undeniable, because I'm not the cookie cutter version of what a scientist is. And so I'm going into the data, looking at all sides of the equation. How is this wrong? How is this correct? And it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming how skewed the science was and what the public was hearing and policy making versus the reality, which is, in clinical trials, the gold standard, when we know something is very likely true, is a randomized controlled trial, all right? This is where we have a specific intervention and we monitor a specific outcome.
Yep.
We know this is the thing that we changed, this is the outcome. Every single randomized controlled trial found that masks are not effective in preventing the spread of viral infections, every single one of them. And I went and read many meta-analyses that included observational studies and comparative studies mixed in with some randomized controlled trials. And if you go and read all the references, all the randomized controlled trials do, like I said, we have comparative studies and we have observational studies, which are open for massive biases. Basically, you could find anything in anything and make a connection. Mm-hmm. That's not science.
Right.
That's guessing. Now, those things can bear out good science, but very often they can be manipulated based on the cognitive bias on the person reading it. And so what people are seeing out there, oftentimes these are theoretical models. Keyword theoretical, that if everybody just wore a mask, we would prevent, you know, 200,000 cases or whatever the case might be. The mask compliance, let me just talk about reality for a second. The mask compliance has been 70 to 90%, all right? There's very few people who are just running into Walmart without a mask on. They're just like, I'm not going for it. That's just what the media shows, social media shows. Most people want to be able to just go and buy some plastic bags or whatever. I don't know. They just want to go buy some deodorant and they're going to follow the rules. Yeah. But even with that, look at the case rate. Look at the death rate. Everything has gotten incredibly bad. Now, here's why. So, and just to share with everybody, and anybody can go and look this stuff up, or I put it all together. You can go and read every single one of these studies that I'm talking about. And it's at the Model Health Show, themodelhealthshow.com/mask facts. And so this is a meta-analysis. These are some of the best types of studies, as long as they have this other part. A meta-analysis of 19 randomized controlled trials, okay? This was published in the International Journal of Nursing Studies. looking at the effectiveness of masks in reducing infections in 8 community settings, 6 healthcare settings, and 5 as source control. And the study concluded that medical masks, aka surgical masks, were not effective in reducing the spread of viral infections, and cloth masks were even less effective. So one is not effective, the other one is less than not effective. And so for me, I'm just like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
And what the researchers concluded was that the wearing a cloth mask could potentially exacerbate or increase your likelihood of infection because it's creating a wet microclimate on your face, and it's making it easier for virus particles to move in and out of the mask.
Right.
This should just, at least, even if you don't believe it, if you believe everything else, you just have to acknowledge that this exists. You have to acknowledge that this exists. And now here's the rub, is that the conclusion of the study, and this is what's different from hearing this from me versus just somebody going and reading the study that hasn't been doing this as long. The conclusion of the study actually says community mask use by well people, which is, this is an experiment, by the way, so already there's an issue here, could be beneficial, particularly for COVID-19, where transmission may be pre-symptomatic. So it's taking it, it's still taking in, it's a bias by the researchers.
Yeah, clearly.
That's taking in, you know, we found that this is not effective, but maybe with this, it is effective, right? Now, here's the thing. So this is the last part. There's another part earlier in the study where it did say that community mask use with or without hand washing was found to be effective. Now, this is where it gets really hairy, where, because for me, I'm just like, okay, cool, cool, cool. Wow, we got some community evidence. All right, so let's take this into consideration. But I went and read all the references, which takes a lot. This is the difference also today, is that we have a lot of data.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of data out there, but we have very little knowledge, because knowledge is taking that data and thinking about that shit before you go and post it.
Right.
Thinking about the different parts, thinking about the nuance, thinking about how it fits together in scenarios, sitting with it and actually understanding it, and not just cut and pasting just because you found some whatever, you know. People love to do that with fact checking. People love to do that with debunking sites. You know, you don't really understand the data. And so what one of the reference was, and I'm just going to tell you, this was published in PLOS One, randomized controlled trial. And this is the conclusion of that study that said that in the community, mask wearing was effective with and without hand washing. Here's what the study said. And all these studies, again, they're at the website that I said earlier. The study concluded, we observed a substantial 43% reduction in the incidence of influenza infection in the face mask and hand hygiene group compared to the control, but this estimate was not statistically significant. That's great. I'm pumped when I see it. I was like, okay, this is making some sense. There is a little bit of evidence, but here's what they also said after that. There were no substantial reductions in influenza-like illness or laboratory-confirmed infections in the face mask only group compared to the controls who didn't wear a mask.
Right.
It's as if it doesn't exist. People see what they want to see. I want to be wrong. Not like really, like my, this is the thing. Like, let me share where that muscle came from. I have a great relationship, which means I've practiced being wrong.
Yes.
So much. I'm good at it. And it just seems like I'm right a lot because I'm willing to be wrong.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to share that, but let me update everybody where we are at now. This is very important. This is the biggest summation of the data, because I shared this data early on, like, hey, we don't have any actual evidence that this is going to work.
Yeah, it came out.
Why are we leaning so hard on this?
Yeah.
When there is a potential downside, which if we have time, we can get to. But here, now, I'm not saying, I'm not Nostradamus, all right? I'm not Miss Cleo, but here's what happened in the data with mask effectiveness. This was conducted by the CDC, all right? The CDC, this is where people are supposed to be getting all their information, that's directing people to that. And please, anybody thinking that the CDC, it's politicized, yes, it is. But it's just, it's depending on which person at different times. It's not party dependent.
Yeah.
It's dependent on who's influencing the researchers.
Right.
And so This study was set out to find why the cases of COVID-19 have continued to skyrocket, even with extremely high mask compliance.
Right.
All right. They were like, what's going on? Why isn't this working?
I thought it was supposed to
work. So the scientists conducted a randomized controlled trial, which again is a gold standard of scientific testing. In one group, they gathered data from a random selection of symptomatic people with confirmed cases of SARS-CoV-2. So they were not talking about flu, because that was an out for people. Well, okay, this is a new virus. I know the mass studies that you mentioned, yes, okay, okay.
Right.
But what about COVID? Yeah. We don't have that data yet.
It's a special virus.
Right, this one's so different. Now, here's the thing. So this is specifically with COVID-19. This is what makes it so remarkable. And then they had another group used as a comparison, you know, a control group, where they gathered. These were symptomatic people of another infection, but they tested negative for SARS-CoV-2. Both groups were sick with some type of infection, which is important to understand. We'll come back to that. Now, here's what the data found as far as their use of their mask. Over 70% of the people who contracted COVID-19 strictly adhered to the mask mandates and always wore their mask. Mm-hmm. Versus people who contracted COVID-19 who said they never wore their mask, just being 4% of the cases. Right off the bat, we're having a very big discernment from what the media is showing and what's happening in reality.
Right.
The vast majority of people who are getting confirmed cases of SARS-CoV-2 are adamantly wearing their mask, and that needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. The mask is not saving anybody. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you combine the folks with the ones who said they always wear their mask with the folks who said they often wore their mask, that was 85% of the people who got infected. And it's not okay. It's not okay to ignore this. But the researchers, still looking through that lens of their cognitive bias, they were looking for why that is. What's the behavior that they're still getting infections and they're always wearing their mask? And then what they found was that the folks getting SARS-CoV-2 infections were more likely to go out to eat.
False sense of security, right? It makes you feel like you have the defense, like, oh, I got the barrier on, I'm good to go. And so you go into a more risky environment where you can actually share air with other people. You're more likely to do that when you think that the mask is saving you.
That's right? It. But there's a caveat there too, because, and this is the most important part of the study, which can be overlooked. This is the control group. The control group, remember, they got sick with something.
Right.
They still got sick with another viral infection, bacterial infection, but they didn't go out to eat as often. Uh-huh. And 75% of them strictly adhered to the mask mandates. They always wore their mask, and they still got sick with something.
Right.
And they weren't going out to eat. Versus just 3% of the people who said they never wore a mask. It wasn't going out to eat. Right. It wasn't that. Because what the thing is, and literally we had a thing come out here, you know, put your mask back on in between bites.
Right.
It's absolutely, the thing is that has to be discerned from this data is that the mask was not effective. As the studies that I mentioned earlier, right. Now we have data specifically on COVID-19 in a population, randomized controlled trial, 85% of the people contracting infections always or often wore their mask. About 71% always wore their fucking mask.
Yeah.
And they still got sick. We have to talk about this. Why do they still get sick? Now, here's the answer. This is what's not talked about as well. And we're going to use some people who are really exposed to viruses. And this is our healthcare workers.
Yeah.
Who the system does not really give a shit about. Because every one of my colleagues, even when I first went to my fancy private university, very expensive, and the pre-med track and all this stuff, I was already getting encouraged to stress myself out. And it's just not a healthy situation.
Oh, yeah.
But so here's what a meta-analysis, again, published by the CDC. 6% of adults hospitalized with COVID-19 were healthcare workers. Hmm. The largest demographic of employment by far, if anything, healthcare workers are the most impacted. And you would think, of course, they're on the front line. But here's what's not talked about. Of the healthcare workers hospitalized with COVID-19, 90% had at least one pre-existing chronic disease. Most often was obesity. 75% of them were obese. Uh-huh. The other pre-existing conditions, hypertension and diabetes. This is the same thing with the bigger CDC study. Those are the top three. And despite the best PPE, all right, oftentimes, now there were some issues in the beginning, but this is played out later.
Yeah.
All right, after we got mass situations, it did not help. The underlying susceptibility is our pre-existing chronic diseases, is our health. And it's so simple. This shouldn't even be something that's debatable, and it's just silly, because when you mentioned earlier, you said this important word, and I said it earlier as well, novel, right? This is a novel virus.
Yeah.
And we didn't have what was told, we don't have an innate immunity to it, mm-hmm. but we don't just have an innate immune system. We also have the adaptive immune system.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, the B cells, T cells, neutrophils, NK cells, all that stuff that literally it's evolved to adapt to anything that we come in contact with, mm-hmm. right? So how are we in relationship to the next novel virus? Are we going to be doing better or worse? If you can't get this by now, then we have a serious problem. Like, there's, in the words of the guy in the water boy, there's something wrong with your medulla oblongata.
Right? Yeah.
We are far more susceptible. We're setting ourselves up for failure when the next thing comes because we didn't address the number one thing which we need to do, which is to get our citizens healthier. And the thing is, we've never done it before. It's never been a focus of this system. It doesn't give a shit about that. It's a system that's based on the farming of sick people. And it keeps trying to throw another drug at it. Let's throw another drug at it. And again, if you think about it logically, how has that worked out for us? We've been throwing all these drugs at hypertension, heart disease, which is the number one killer in America every year. Lisinopril and statins. Every year, more and more drugs, heart disease didn't even make a dent in it. Didn't even make it stop for, you know, to take a piss. Like, yeah. It wasn't even a rest stop. It's just continued to grow. Heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, obesity. 242 million Americans are overweight or obese. This is the vast majority of our population. Right now, we have 43% of our citizens are clinically obese. We're on track here. It was going to be within the next 10 years, but now, because of COVID, we're on track within the next 5 years to have half of our fucking population clinically obese.
Yeah.
And we acting like this is okay.
Yeah.
And wondering why is this not being addressed? You have to ask this question. It's because the system has never been designed to address these things. We have to take it upon ourselves, and we can change it. With everything being as crazy as it is right now, the beauty in it and what really gave me some solace is the fact that when everything is so malleable and uncertain, that's when you can jump in and make change happen.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to do it. You have to be willing to step up and to stand for it.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. It's, you know, and that's sort of the overarching umbrella message of this conversation is like, people need to be empowered to take care of their own health, and they also need to support movements and policy decisions from their governments and from the people who are in control that are supportive of the people's health, right? Like, in Canada, we have socialized medicine and our taxes pay for our healthcare, you know? And so our government has said, you know, everybody's going to get a vaccine, everybody gets healthcare, and your tax dollars are going towards that. And, you know, the reason why we're having the conversation around masks, and this is just one piece of the conversation, is what if the government says, okay, we're going to make masks mandatory, everybody's got to wear masks. What if that becomes a thing for the next 10 years? They're going to pass a law that makes masks mandatory, and we're going to throw you in jail if you don't get masks, but we're going to hand out masks to every household in the country. And this is how much money it's going to cost from the government budget, right? Like, are you going to vote for that or not, right? Based on this conversation, perhaps you should be voting that down and voting vitamin D handouts up, right? Like, what happens, you know, Sean, what things, if the government decided, like, okay, we're gonna hand out free items to every citizen, you know, what 3 to 5 things would you say should be handed out, other than your book, obviously?
Well, the first thing is, and I just want to touch on this because this can be a matrix type thing, you know, waking up and just like my eyes hurt, and then, you know, it's like because you've never used them before.
Yeah.
You know, so seeing this stuff can be a little bit challenging. And I know for some folks, just like, well, why not just wear the mask, even if it helps a little bit? And this is the other part of the conversation. So before I answer that question, I just want to lead in with a little end cap for this piece, which is, even though this data has been censored and it's been downplayed, it exists, and it exists in massive quantity. We do know how masks affect us if we wear them. The data has been around for a long time. And now we're just going to have more evidence on this. But this was a controlled clinical trial published in the journal Antimicrobial Resistance and Infection Control. And they recruited pregnant healthcare workers to wear N95 masks while doing just low intensity activity to find out how this affects their breathing and their lung capacity. The things that you have told that none of this is being affected when they're telling you now to wear two masks or three masks.
Right.
Instead of acknowledging that the fucking mask doesn't work, just wear two. All right. Yeah. So here's what they found. Wearing the N95 mask reduced their normal volume of air displacement between inhalation and exhalation by 23%. The volume of gas inhaled or exhaled specifically from their lungs each minute was reduced by almost 26%. The volume of overall oxygen consumption was reduced by 13.8%. Almost 14% reduction of oxygen consumption wearing that mask. And the ability to expire carbon dioxide was reduced by 17.7%. Carbon dioxide rebreathing has been debunked. If you go, it is debunked. It's just debunked sites. These asshats are not actually looking at the data because it exists. Now, you may think, I mean, for me, when I was even going through the study, I was like, okay, well, they must have been wearing this for a long time over the course of the day. I could see that happening. This was within 15 minutes of wearing the mask. It just gets worse and worse as it's worn. And this is the thing. And also becomes less and less effective as it's worn if people care to actually look at the data. This has existed because we are a water-based being. Once the mask is gained moisture, it just increases the ability for aerosols, droplets, virus particles themselves to move in and out of the mask. Right. It's like putting a jetpack on them. So that's just one study. And let me share one more because there's so many on this. And this one was... I'm just going to pick one. There's so many again. I'll give another one published by the CDC. And this was published also in the Annals of Work Exposure and Health, revealed that wearing a mask, due to the highly sensitive nature of the face and breathing pathways, was found to inhibit normal breathing, leading to increased anxiety, elevated stress hormones, false suffocation alarm in the central nervous system, and panic attacks. Don't act like this shit isn't happening, because there's so many people like, oh, this doesn't bother me. Your brain, humans evolved to keep shit away from our mouth and our nose. It's abnormal. You can condition yourself, but there is suppression. This is a thing. It's like 2020, 2021. We have to prove that covering your mouth and nose impacts your breathing. You know, it's unbelievable where we're at right now. Like we got rockets. We're over there messing around with Mars. And we think that the solution is to cover our mouth, our breathing pathways. And the fact that it doesn't hurt us to do so, and the results from every single study shows otherwise. And so with, you know, the big kind of task force voice out there recommending to wear two masks, he's doing that in an effort to make your mask more like an N95, wear a surgical mask and a cloth mask.
Yep.
And it's just, it's so absurd, and it's so disappointing because, again, wearing a mask was not effective. It didn't work out. And so instead of acknowledging that, just saying, hey, and I actually mentioned this in the documentary that I made on the subject. And I said the words, I was like, instead of acknowledging the fact that this isn't effective, our cognitive biases are going to keep trying to find reasons why and to try to advocate or to frame things to say, you know, things like, well, this doesn't work. No, it's not that. You just need to wear two. That's all it is. Instead of acknowledging the truth right in front of our face. So to answer your question on the backside of that, what should be recommended? I would still not have had a big problem with this because, again, the data exists is so overwhelming. But my dissonance for it would have been much lower if every news broadcast said, make sure to wear your mask, but also make sure to get in your 20-minute walk today. Our citizens, we need this for the health of our immune system. Our immune systems are going to be challenged right now. We want to make sure that your immune system isn't being suppressed by your lack of activity. Mm-hmm. The majority of your immune system is located in your gastrointestinal tract. We've got to make sure that we're putting good stuff in there. A large portion of your immune system is operating in your lymphatic system, which doesn't have a pump. Like your heart and your nervous system, your lymphatic system doesn't move unless you move. This extracellular waste management system, we need you to be moving. So wear your mask, get in 20 minutes a day. Make sure to wash your hands and get in your 7 hours of sleep or 6 hours, whatever. Like this is, that's a whole, it could be cookie cutter. Yeah. You know, I wrote Sleep Smarter. So it's not about a certain number. It's going to depend on the person. But one of the things that we do know, as I mentioned earlier, that was just from the Mayo Clinic of many other studies, one night of sleep deprivation suppresses your immune system. Sleep deprivation increases the likelihood specifically of contracting a viral infection. Mm-hmm. So Americans, right. Make sure you're washing your hands and getting to bed. We've got to take care of our health. That would be the other recommendation, is that's coming along with every messaging for things that are largely unproven. Hand washing is effective, by the way. The data shows that. That's right. Great. However, we don't want to create neuroticism. And I've seen it time and time again with people washing their hands and using sanitizer to the point that they're actually increasing their susceptibility to infection because they're damaging their skin so much.
Right.
And the messages I've been receiving, you know, just because of being somebody who's a figure in this space, of people's hands just being raw and their skin is just torn off. It is so gut-wrenching because they're afraid. And so those two things, you know, get in your 20-minute walk each day, make sure you're getting your sleep. And then the third thing would be an advocation for what your immune cells are actually made out of. And this goes back, the cherry on top of what we talked about earlier. With 110 million approximately confirmed cases as of now, map that out with epidemiology, what we know from trends, from centuries of data collection, but really especially the last century and a half, we know that there's very likely 10 to 15 times more people have contracted the infection in a population, you know, being mm-hmm. endemic in the population. So we're talking well over 1 billion cases worldwide. Mm-hmm. How have almost 1 billion people survived getting this infection? How have they survived? Something that is so virulent and deadly, how do they survive? Did they take some kind of magical, some kind of magical nose candy? Did they take some kind of magical candy, some Pez or something? Like, what saved them? Their fucking immune system. Their immune system did the thing that it does. It adapts, the adaptive immune system, to the exposure to viruses. We have over 400 trillion viruses in and on our bodies right now. Many of them are pathogenic. Yeah. Viruses are the most... There's more viruses here on planet Earth than literally anything else. There are more viruses than anything. We cannot escape them. This is going to continue to happen. But your immune system itself, if people want to go back and look at the data on where our immune system even came from, that everybody, you know, it's kind of, we talk about it a little bit. Your immune system is actually kind of like your mitochondria. One of the best theories that we have is that bacteria integrated with our human cells, creating the mitochondria, these kind of energy power plants of our cells. The best data that we have shows that our immune system is a virus. The root of it is a virus mm-hmm. integrating itself with humans, so much so that when the Human Genome Project was done, it was found that the human genome itself, is 8% endogenous retrovirus. We are a fucking virus. And if you look at our behavior, what's the rest of the planet in trouble for? It's us. But truly, I mean, just from the lens of what a virus is, we are 8% virus ourselves as humans, you know? So if we don't give ourselves the opportunity to adapt and to grow, but also most importantly, not just haphazardly doing that, but improving our health so that our immune system is robust and capable and healthy, less than 1% of the information that's been out there about this situation has been about what's most important. And we, including this moment today, are changing that. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, man. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing so much information. Thank you for staying long with me. Quick plug for your book. Everybody, check out Eat Smarter. If it's still on the shelves, grab it, because it sounds like these copies go quick. I really love how you break down the science in this book. Look how thick this thing is. There's a lot of information in this book, and you almost... animate or cartoonize some of the ways that the body works on the inside, and fat cells and turning everything into a, you paint an image in the person's mind to really help them understand how the body works. And I love how you do that, and you break it down so that we can remember. And you've got a 30-day eating plan. Like, folks, if you want to stay healthy, if you're still locked down, if you're still holding those 15 or 20 pounds that you put on in the last year and you want to shed those pounds, this is the newest information on diet out there. And you can just follow the plan in this book and shed those pounds and come out of this situation healthier than you went in. So check out Eat Smarter. Sean, I'm going to link to your podcast. I'm going to link to your documentary on masks. I'm going to link to your site with the studies. And thanks for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate you sharing this information with the people and for doing everything that
Thank you
do.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. And I appreciate everybody listening and hanging out with us. And, you know, please have some compassion for my passion today. As I mentioned, it really turned my energy when I thought about, my family member that I almost just lost. And all of my, my son has lost so many of his friends. You know, these are young people, and, you know, they don't have a voice in this situation. And I'm very passionate about speaking up for all of us, whether we realize it or not, and just helping to shift the conversation to what's real, to what makes us human, you know, and taking care of each other and, you know, taking all the data into consideration and just doing the best that we can, which the best that we can do as humans is far better than what we're displaying right now. So I think that there's a lot of room for us to elevate and go up from here.
Oh. Okay. Thank you, brother. All the best.